Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, November 15th. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Concerns Raised Over Condition of Streets. City of Midland staff project a $34 million price tag for annual maintenance and repair work. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The City of Midland reported Tuesday that there are 667 miles of paved roads in Midland, and that years of underinvestment in streets, including the $100 million road bond, have left the city with a cumulative pavement condition index score of 69. That score is slightly better than 2017, when Midland voters greenlighted road bond funding for more than 30 projects around the city. The PCI that year was 65. A PCI puts Midland in the middle of the road of West Texas cities, with scores of 46 reported for Abilene, 57 for Lubbock, 61 for Odessa, and 72 for Odessa. The city reported spending $8 million for pavement maintenance in fiscal year 2023. That doesn't include road bond spending. And 32% of Midland streets have a PCI less than 55, a presentation stated. These roadways are not candidates for treatment. They need mill and inlay or total reconstruction. On Tuesday, city staff showed the Midland City Council that the maintenance needs for the streets on an annual basis is closer to $34 million. Including $15 million for arterial and collector street maintenance projects and $19 million for residential street maintenance. Needless to say, council members were caught off guard by the figure, calling the figure exceptional and asking questions about how to make up the difference. The State of Streets presentation told council members that the money dedicated to streets has dropped in recent years. And the money dedicated in fiscal year 2023, $8 million, doesn't go as far as it used to because of inflation. City staff told the council that the $34 million would have been $25 million just 4 years ago. City staff also said Midland streets aren't getting any help from climate, traffic, and drainage issues. They showed city leaders the city of Midland is on pace to fill more than 14,400 potholes, which would be the third largest total going back to 2017. They added they are crack filling 150 lane miles and paving around 10 miles of roads this year. They also reminded the council that money spent on certain treatments regularly will help the city from having to incur as much regular costs, including total road rebuilds. There were examples of how the City of Midland is expanding its own in-house operations, including when it comes to paving. That change, according to city staff, has or will save the city $2.365 million on a list of 11 projects that are or have taken place across the city. It also offers the potential of saving tens of millions of dollars when it comes to concrete paving. Moving forward, the city plans on changing Midland's street maintenance program map to divide the community into 6 regions instead of 9. Guaranteeing each region to receive crack fill every 6 years, and then to receive a second treatment, like mill and inlay, hot in-place recycling, microsurfacing, and mastic seal in year 2. Is it expected Midland can greenlight a program that puts another 20-something million dollars of stress on a budget that is overcommitted as it is? Probably not. But city officials have made the Midland City Council aware of the needs for a $1.04 billion total pavement network, and that one-third of Midland's roads are beyond repair. This article is entitled, City Leaders Okay Permitting Sought at the Tailgate. Entertainment Venue had appealed to council to allow event this weekend, despite having previous permits expire. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. It's not every day that a Midland resident asks for the City of Midland to give him a ticket. Tuesday, however, was one of those days. Sean Elphick, operator of the Tailgate Entertainment Venue in North Midland, pleaded with city leaders to cite him or whatever they wanted, but to allow an event this weekend that he said will help with the tailgate's bottom line. It will be the last event of significance before Elphick makes certain changes to bring his venue into code with the City of Midland. The tailgate on Tuesday asked for certain special use designations, permitting that will allow the tailgate to continue to operate southwest of the intersection at Loop 250 at Big Spring Street, north of the office complexes at Claydesta. It was stated that the tailgate had allowed certain permits to expire and, under normal conditions, the tailgate wouldn't be allowed to operate an event that Elphick said might draw as many as 800 or 900 people. But he told the council all the contracts were signed for the event and he was willing to pay any fines to keep my business operating, and so I'm not out of business. The council consented. A fine of $2,000 was a possibility, according to a conversation between Elphick and the council during the meeting Tuesday. Longer term, Elphick has committed to certain fixes to the space where the tailgate operates. Those fixes include permanent restroom facilities for as many as 1,000 people, a fire lane around the facility, structures lacking permits to go through the permitting process, and fencing to be erected along the Loop 250 service road to prevent vehicles from hopping the curb. Elphick said the fire lane and bathrooms alone will cost around $60,000. The council approved Elphick's items on Tuesday's agenda. They understood his predicament that the area in North Midland is a temporary location. He told the council he might lock up a more permanent site within a few weeks and be located there possibly within a year. That land is owned by HEB and is likely the site of its third Midland store in the future. There was no timetable offered by the city for when a new HEB will be built there. This is the Business and Oil page. This article is entitled, Does Texas Really Outproduce California? By Sarah Bahari, The Dallas Morning News. U.S. Senator Ted Cruz wants people to know that Texas, not California, is the country's top wind energy producer. We produce a lot more wind energy in Texas than California does, Cruz said in an interview this month with CNBC's Last Call. They produce a lot of hot air, but the wind energy is produced in Texas. Wind turbines are a common sight across Texas, but is Cruz correct that the state, long known for its oil and gas dominance, outproduces California in renewable wind energy? Contacted for comment, Cruz's spokesperson did not provide a response by our deadline. PolitiFact examined U.S. Energy Information Administration data and found that Texas not only produces more wind energy than California, but also is the nation's top producer. Texas generated more than one quarter of all U.S. wind-sourced electricity in 2022, leading the country for the 17th consecutive year. Last year, Texas produced more than 114,000 megawatt hours of wind energy, nearly 8 times more than California, which produced about 14,600 megawatt hours. Texas has more than 15,000 wind turbines, according to the Texas Comptroller's Office, more than any other state in the U.S. A megawatt can power about 200 homes during peak demand, according to the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, which manages the state's power grid. After Texas, the states generating the most wind-sourced electricity in 2022 were Iowa, Oklahoma, Kansas, and Illinois. Texas leads the nation in wind power generation for several reasons, said Tom Overby, an engineering professor and director of the Smart Grid Center at Texas A&M University. The state boasts extremely high wind speeds, particularly in North and West Texas and along the southern Gulf Coast, Overby said. For example, the average peak wind speed in El Paso in West Texas hit 35.9 miles per hour in April 2022, the El Paso Times reported. An abundance of open land in these regions makes the cost of developing wind farms relatively low. The state also offers a property tax exemption equal to the value of wind and solar energy devices. Wind farms enjoyed strong bipartisan political support in Texas, at least in their early years, Overby said. He pointed to the Texas Renewable Portfolio Standard, signed in 1999 by then-Governor George W. Bush, which aimed to spur renewable energy development. In 2005, then-Governor Rick Perry signed a bill that expanded renewable energy and improved the electric transmission infrastructure. Although Democrats have pushed green energy measures, including the Green New Deal, Perry and Bush are both Republicans. Texas has also become a leader in solar power, Overby said. In 2022, Texas was the country's second largest solar energy producer after California, according to the EIA. This year, the state is adding more solar energy capacity than any state in the U.S., according to the agency. Our ruling. Cruz said, "We produce a lot more wind energy in Texas than California does." Federal data shows that in 2022, Texas produced more wind energy than any other state, including California. That year, Texas produced more than 114,000 megawatt hours of wind energy, compared with California's production of 14,600 megawatt hours. We rate this claim true. This article is entitled "Inflation, Gas Prices Eased in October" by Christopher Ruggaber, AP economics writer. Washington. Inflation in the United States slowed last month in a sign that the Federal Reserve's interest rate hikes are continuing to cool the consumer price spikes that have bedeviled consumers for the past 2 years. Tuesday's report from the Labor Department showed that lower gas prices helped cool overall inflation, which was unchanged from September to October, down from the 0.4% jump the previous month. Compared with a year ago, consumer prices rose 3.2% in October, down from 3.7% in September. Excluding volatile food and energy prices, so-called core prices also weakened unexpectedly. They rose just 0.2% from September to October, slightly below the pace of the previous 2 months. Economists closely track core prices, which are thought to provide a good sign of inflation's future path. Measured year over year, core prices rose 4% in October, down from 4.1% in September. The latest price figures arrive as Fed officials, led by Chair Jerome Powell, are considering whether their benchmark interest rate is high enough to quell inflation or if they need to impose another rate hike in coming months. Powell said last week that Fed officials were not confident that rates were high enough to tame inflation. The Fed has raised its benchmark interest rate 11 times in the past year and a half to about 5.4%, the highest level in 22 years. The costs of many services, notably rents, travel, and health care, are still rising faster than before the pandemic. Services prices typically change more slowly than the cost of goods because they largely reflect labor costs, which aren't directly affected by interest rates. The central bank's rate hikes have increased the costs of mortgages, auto loans, credit cards, and many forms of business borrowing, part of a concerted drive to slow growth and cool inflation pressures. The Fed is trying to achieve a, quote, soft landing, raising borrowing costs just enough to curb inflation without tipping the economy into a deep recession. The rate increases have had some impact. Year over year, inflation has dropped from a peak of 9.1% in June 2022, the highest level in four decades, to 3.7% in September. That figure is forecast to have fallen further in October to 3.3%. Last week, Powell warned that if inflation didn't cool fast enough, the Fed will not hesitate to raise rates further. Still, the central bank's policymakers have left their key short-term rate unchanged since July, and most economists say they think the Fed is done hiking. Prices first accelerated in 2021 as consumers stepped up spending amid a fading pandemic. Much greater demand ran headlong into snarled supply chains, which led retailers and other companies to quickly jack up prices. Inflation has since eased as supply chains have improved and higher borrowing rates have weakened some industries, notably housing. But in his remarks last week, Powell said that further reductions in inflation might require a cool down in spending in addition to further improvements in supply networks, a distinction that potentially points to further hikes. Economists are keeping a close eye on several inflation metrics, including the cost of rent and housing, health insurance, and services such as dining out, entertainment, and travel. Starting with Tuesday's price report, the government is altering how it calculates health insurance costs, and the changes are expected to result in higher overall inflation rates in the coming months. Many economists say a key reason why most Americans hold a gloomy view of the economy, despite very low unemployment and steady hiring, is that the costs of things they buy regularly, milk, meat, bread, and other groceries, remain so much higher than they were 3 years ago. Many of these items are still growing more expensive, though more gradually. This article is entitled Midland Fights Plan for Disposal Wells. City Leaders Against Injection of Oil Field Wastewater Near Drinking Supply. By Martha Piskowski, Inside Climate News. Attorneys for the City of Midland, the oil capital of Texas, made an unusual request to regulators this year. Could they please be allowed to challenge drilling permits? Midland isn't contesting permits to drill for oil. The city is challenging applications by Pilot Water Solutions to inject oil and gas wastewater deep underground adjacent to the T-Bar Ranch, where Midland gets about 30% of its drinking water. City leaders worry that Pilot's disposal wells could jeopardize their long-term water supply. The Railroad Commission of Texas, which regulates oil and gas drilling and disposal wells, agreed in June to give Midland standing to challenge the permits. The case will go before a Railroad Commission administrative judge in January. The dispute highlights two rising challenges in West Texas, where to dispose of billions of barrels of toxic oil and gas wastewater, and how to get enough fresh water to keep the taps flowing. Midland Mayor Lori Blong, herself the co-owner of the oil and gas company Octane Energy, traveled to Austin in June to appeal to the Railroad Commission in an open meeting. Midland has an independent and friendly relationship with the oil and gas industry, Blong told the commissioners, adding disposal wells are essential to that industry. However, I also understand that all SWD, saltwater disposal, well construction procedures and applications are not created equal. And across Texas, they must demonstrate that groundwater is protected, Blong said. Zachary Neal, Pilot Water Solutions Executive Vice President, said the company has introduced multiple layers of protection in the proposed wells and will take groundwater samples to monitor the safety of the community's water supply. Neal said these steps exceed regulatory requirements. Demand for water, disposal sites at odds. Midland's water woes are nothing new. In 1965, the city of Midland bought the 20,229-acre T-Bar Ranch in Winkler County, a rural part of the Permian Basin near the New Mexico state line, for future water supply. That decision proved prescient after the drought of 2011 in the Permian Basin. That year, reservoirs dipped lower and lower, and Midland and Odessa introduced water restrictions for the first time. Midland, the quintessential oil boom town, acknowledged that development would grind to a halt if there wasn't enough water to go around. After squeaking through 2011, Midland decided it was time to tap into the T-Bar Ranch water. A 67-mile pipeline was completed by May 2013 at a cost of over $200 million to connect the T-Bar Ranch to Midland. The T-Bar Ranch was also designated as Midland's emergency water supply. That's why a series of permit applications to drill wastewater wells adjacent to the T-Bar Ranch caught the attention of Midland officials. According to Midland's protest letter, the city owns the groundwater under Sections 15 and 16, Block C-23, which are adjacent to the T-Bar Ranch, and where Pilot intends to drill the wells. Between June and November 2022, Pilot Water Solutions applied for permits to drill 18 disposal wells there with a combined capacity of up to 567 million gallons of produced water per month. Disposal wells, also known as injection wells, receive the huge volumes of produced water that come up alongside oil and gas in the drilling process. Fracking a single oil or gas well can require tens of millions of gallons of water. According to its website, Pilot, based in Houston, operates 126 disposal wells and more than 850 miles of water pipelines. On December 2, 2022, attorneys for the city of Midland protested the applications for five of the wells with the Railroad Commission. Pilot was proposing to inject up to 24,900 barrels of produced water per day per well, within 1,000 feet of Midland's water wells, according to the city. The lawyers wrote that the city of Midland has completed 42 water wells in the T-Bar Ranch area that provide between 30 and 35% of the city's freshwater supply. The city of Midland is entitled to protest as an affected person in order to protect its critical water supply and long-term investment of the water supply distribution system, they wrote. The Railroad Commission at first rejected Midland's request for standing in the case, but after Blong appealed to the commissioners in June, the city was allowed to challenge the permits. Accidents happen. Disposal well design has evolved dramatically over the years. The wellbore passes through an aquifer and continues through a confining layer before reaching the layer where the wastewater, which can contain drilling chemicals and toxins such as arsenic and benzene, is disposed. This confining layer and the wellbore casing are designed to prevent the wastewater from entering the freshwater aquifer. Even so, evidence of disposal wells leaking into aquifers have been documented. Midland's lawyers laid out the crux of their argument in a filing this summer. They acknowledged that Pilot has proposed three strings of casing on the wellbores and a sufficient distance between the water supply aquifer and the injection depths to protect groundwater. However, Pilot has the burden to prove that the amended applications will not harm groundwater, the lawyers wrote. Moreover, accidents happen, and an accident resulting in the contamination of the T-Bar well field would be disastrous. The City of Midland and its attorneys declined to comment on the pending case. A Railroad Commission spokesman said that its permitting rules protect ground and fresh water and make sure that wells are properly constructed to ensure that the fluid is confined to the proposed injection or disposal interval. Groundwater hydrologist Ronald Green is on a mission to get more people in Texas to pay attention to disposal wells. You can't undo the past, Green said, but you can do things to try to mitigate for the future. Green said the Railroad Commission's minimum standards for preventing pollution from disposal wells assume everything works exactly as designed. But these are man-made engineering systems, and they are going to fail, Green said. Green said wells should be designed with redundancies to prevent contamination. But he warned that even a well-designed disposal well can cause problems if there are deteriorating or abandoned wells nearby. These compromised wells can become a conduit for the wastewater to enter a freshwater aquifer or even reach the surface. Laura Capper, the principal consultant for Energy Makers Advisory Group in Houston, and an expert on disposal wells, agreed. I think the dangerous part of the architecture is not so much the disposal well, she said. It's probably old, aging infrastructure that might be in place from the 60s and 70s that's still operating. Green has represented several groundwater districts challenging disposal wells before the Railroad Commission. While many of the wells are ultimately drilled, he said, these administrative hearings force regulators to scrutinize applications more thoroughly. That's going to raise that standard a little bit more, he said. Neil of Pilot Water Solutions said that the proposed wells were designed with three strings of steel casing, which are each protected by cement to the surface. Pilot will also install wellhead automation to monitor for leaks and shut down the well if any leaks are detected. Pilot is continuing to do its part and working with the City of Midland and the surrounding communities to address any concerns they may have, Neil said in a statement. Neil said Pilot identified and studied all wellbores within a half-mile radius of the proposed disposal wells, including abandoned or plugged wells. He said the Railroad Commission verified there were no concerns that any abandoned wells within a quarter-mile radius were not adequately plugged. The Railroad Commission spokesperson did not confirm whether or not abandoned wells have been identified within a quarter-mile radius of the proposed pilot disposal wells, but acknowledged any such wells must be properly plugged. The administrative hearing for Midland's challenge to pilots' permit applications is currently scheduled for January 8th to 11th in Austin. Two Railroad Commission administrative judges will decide whether to deny or modify the permits or approve them as is. Waste disposal industry on shaky ground. While proposed disposal wells in Winkler County have raised concerns about groundwater, they are outside the highest risk areas for another disposal hazard, earthquakes. On November 8th, a 5.2 magnitude earthquake shook West Texas from its epicenter in the Permian Basin near the town of Mentone. It was the second 5.0 magnitude or stronger earthquake in the area in less than a year. An increase in earthquakes in the Permian Basin that seismologists linked to disposal wells led the Railroad Commission to introduce new regulations beginning in 2021 that restricted deep injection in favor of shallow injection and limit wells in certain high seismicity zones called seismic response areas. The T-Bar Ranch is outside the seismic response areas, but adjacent to freshwater supplies. Capper said earthquakes and other hazards have led to increased scrutiny of disposal wells, both from regulators and within the industry. I've seen situations where operators are going and even suggesting to the Railroad Commission that the restrictions could be tighter, Capper said. It's a different environment than it was 5 years ago, where you were waiting for Big Brother to police you. With more restrictions on disposal wells because of seismic risk, companies are struggling to dispose of their produced water. The cost and logistics of injecting produced water is forcing companies to slow down oil and gas drilling. Chevron CEO Mike Wirth acknowledged these challenges in the company's third quarter earnings call, October 27th. Produced water is becoming an issue in the Permian, Wirth said. The reinjection of that and doing that in a way that minimizes the incidence of induced seismicity. We've got some more produced water handling infrastructure spend. Katie Smy, a geoscientist at the University of Texas, Austin's Bureau of Economic Geology, said the new regulations are having a marked impact on the economics of disposal wells. We absolutely see evidence, particularly near seismic response areas, that drillers are not bringing wells online because they don't have disposal capacity, she said. It's not just what you can produce, it's also how much you can inject and where you can inject it. Oil and gas companies are recycling more produced water to reuse in the drilling process. Texas is considering alternatives to disposal wells for produced water, including permitting discharges into surface water, treating the water for reuse, and applying it to agricultural land. But for now, injecting the wastewater underground is still the most cost-effective option. Injection seems to be the baseline for taking most of the water produced in the Permian Basin region. And it doesn't seem that will change in the very near term, Smy said. So this is a challenge that we see potentially increasing over time and not going away. And as long as the oil and gas industry has more produced water and fewer options of where to inject it, conflicts like the one between Midland and Pilot Water are likely to arise. The Texas Tribune is a member-supported, nonpartisan newsroom informing and engaging Texans on state politics and policy. Learn more at texastribune.org. This article is entitled NWS, Sunny Skies Return to Midland. Past few days have seen cloudy, cooler conditions. By Stuart Doreen, staff writer. The sun will come out tomorrow. The National Weather Service reported Tuesday that after foggy and mostly cloudy conditions in the morning, the forecast calls for sunny skies Wednesday with a high temperature near 68 degrees. Cloudy and cooler conditions have existed the past few days with high temperatures in the 50s and plenty of gray skies. The National Weather Service reported 0.6 inch of rain since October 9th has soaked the grounds around Midland International Airport. The NWS also showed no more precipitation in the 7-day forecast. High temperatures in the 60s and 70s are expected through Monday.
Complaint against ECISD filed with TEA. An organization called Disability Rights Texas has filed a complaint with the Texas Education Agency claiming Ector County ISD is in violation of federal law. Schools are required by the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act, the IDEA, of 1975 to actively identify and evaluate students who may need special education services, according to a news release issued by Disability Rights Texas. The complaint says ECISD has failed to meet federally mandated timelines for evaluating students with disabilities, resulting in a denial of a free and appropriate public education under IDEA for as many as 500 children. Since the district says it still has more public records to provide to DR Texas, it's suspected that the number of children impacted is much higher, the release said. Through Chief Communications Officer Mike Atkins, ECISD said in a statement late Tuesday that it became aware of the complaint late Tuesday afternoon. The main issue is one our school district has been fighting for several years, a severe shortage of diagnosticians and speech pathologists, resulting in longer waits for students to be evaluated. This is an issue facing school districts across the state. A typical evaluation can take up to 12 hours from initial parent contact to the full evaluation and then writing the report. Not only are evaluations required for new students, but full evaluations for qualified students are required again after 3 years, the statement said. In an effort to provide students the support they need, ECISD has taken several steps to increase the availability of qualified diagnosticians. Paying ECISD diagnosticians additional compensation to conduct reviews on Saturdays. Contracting with retired diagnosticians locally and with others from across the state. Contracting with and sometimes hiring full-time virtual diagnosticians from elsewhere in Texas. Created a diagnostician pipeline program with the University of Texas Permian Basin and Sewell State University, in which ECISD provides funding for candidates to pursue certification. Currently, 4 people are in that program. Has $1.6 million in contracts in place with companies to help with special evaluations and educational testing. ECISD is committed to its children and families. With new leadership in place in the Special Education Department, our staff will continue to do all we can to provide the evaluation and support needed for our children to be successful, the statement said. One of the students is 11-year-old Giovanni, who was diagnosed with ADHD. His mother, LaShawn, suspects he might have autism and requested an evaluation for special education services in 2021 from ECISD. He still has not been tested, the news release stated. While the family waits, Giovanni has experienced bullying, lack of positive behavior supports, and academic struggles. In one instance, the school called in the police when the 10-year-old was walking around the playground trying to calm himself. The long delay in evaluating him has resulted in critical services missed that are affecting his ability to succeed in school, the news release stated. DR Texas urges DEA to order the district to immediately provide evaluations or compensatory services for the students named in the complaint, in addition to taking these district-wide actions. Review and revise district policies pertaining to its timelines for the completion of special education evaluations. Determine whether each impacted student in ECISD is eligible for compensatory education. Appoint a monitor to ECISD to assist the district in establishing and carrying out a corrective action plan and monitoring its compliance with that plan. Conduct an on-site audit of the educational files of all students receiving special education in the district to determine the child find violations and training needs. What we are seeing in ECISD is a blatant violation of these students' education rights, said Tabitha Dwyer, DR Texas attorney. The longer these students wait for evaluations, the longer they go without the services they need to be successful in school. What the school district is doing is extremely alarming and damaging to these students' futures. Council blames former staffers for park issues. Odessa City Council members spent considerable time discussing what they perceive to be the failings of past park and city administrators during its regular city council meeting Tuesday night. First, the council was informed by new Parks and Recreation Director Max Reyes the city never had a $1.9 million project at Slater Park inspected after it was completed in November of 2016. Reyes said arrangements had been made for the inspection to take place Tuesday. Failure to come into compliance with the Texas Department of Licensing and Regulation could cost the city as much as $5,000 a day, he said. Secondly, Reyes told council members that the Floyd Gwen Park project still isn't complete. Since he took over his role from former Parks Director Steve Patton, Reyes said he has discovered major irrigation issues, a holy pavilion roof, improperly crimped trim, and faulty weather stripping. In addition, Reyes also discovered that instead of removing an asphalt parking lot, a contractor simply dumped dirt over it, claiming that's what a prior administrator instructed them to do. The lights to the park are currently locked down because a subcontractor is waiting to be paid by the main contractor, Onyx, Reyes said. Council member Denise Swanner noted the $6 million project has $1.3 million in change orders. On top of that, the council recently learned an $80,000 public art project can't be installed until the city pays for its foundation. The artist told the city that he and Patton had a verbal agreement the city would pay for the foundation. Reyes said Tuesday night the artist also wants the city to install $80,000 worth of surface-mounted lights for his piece. The council voted at its last meeting to cancel its contract with the artist, although the city has already paid him $40,000. The council indicated to staff they want them to explore filing an insurance claim to resolve the construction project situation. City Manager John Beckmeyer called the entire Floyd Gwynn situation a boondoggle from the get-go. Mayor Javier Hovind said situation was the result of the old culture. Mismanagement has been seen again and again with Sherwood Park, the park at UTPB, McKinney Park, and now Floyd Gwynn Park, he claimed. It's just a farce of what's been going on here within the previous administration in the parks and many others, and this is why it's imperative we make these changes, Hoviad said. I keep saying this, that the culture is in the past. It's behind us. This is not the culture that exists, and everybody that's in the city is fixing it. We're identifying it. It's not a time to sit there and just throw up our hands. We're going to deal with the situation. We're going to fix it. We're going to hold companies we hire responsible, and we're not going to burden taxpayers. The council also voted 5-0 Tuesday to discontinue a program that sets aside 1% of capital improvement projects over $250,000 for public art. Council members Steve Thompson and Gilbert Vasquez abstained from the vote, but their colleagues said the city simply can't afford the program when it needs to address other things, such as water and roads. The council also heard a presentation from the city's new strategic planning policy manager, Jeff Fisher, who has been researching other cities' policies on carports. Right now, carports are not allowed in front of houses in Odessa, and if they're detached, they're not allowed on the side either. After hearing Fisher's report, the council seemed to agree they are interested in changing the city's ordinance to allow for detached carports under some circumstances, as long as they match the facade of the home and can't be used for storage. Fisher is expected to come back to the council with a proposed ordinance soon. The council also heard Deputy City Manager Agapito Bernal as hired Lee Albertson as interim court administrator and two other new supervisors. Albertson is a certified court clerk with the National Center for State Courts and a trainer for the Texas Municipal Court Education Center and the National Center for State Courts. All three women were hired after Municipal Court Administrator Kimberly Jozywak and some other court leaders resigned in recent weeks. Albertson said she has a list of 30 things they're working on, including building metrics and improving processes. Brunel said he is also working on getting a current staff member qualified to become a bailiff, a position that has been empty for a couple of years. In addition, the council heard from Odessa Police Chief Mike Gerke, who would like to take the savings from 48 open police officer positions and provide raises to his current officers and make the department more competitive. He provided the council with 4 proposals, but the one he prefers would still leave almost $1.1 million in excess funds and allow him to hire 4 civilian community service officers and 8 police officers and give a financial incentive for officers who work at night. The proposal also eliminates compression issues and the corporate position within the department. Corporals, Gerke said, don't have different duties than officers. Beckmeyer supported Gerke's proposal and said he's okay with coming to the council in 6 months or a year for more officers because by then OPD will be able to fill the position thanks to the raise in pay. Patty Graven, the city executive officer of the Girl Scouts of the Desert Southwest, also spoke with the council about the possibility of the city donating the building at 5217 North Dixie to the Girl Scouts. They've been leasing the building since 1986 and would like to update it, but in order to obtain grant funding, they would need to own the building, Craven said. More than 250 girls from 13 troops use the building regularly, she said. City staff was instructed to do a title exam on the building. Hoven also asked the council to consider creating a committee of faith-based organizations to help guide what policies we can and cannot come up with, what we should consider to start addressing some of our issues that are not going to go away and they're going to multiply. Homelessness is one issue the mayor brought up. Too often, there aren't enough people to man warming stations that open up on especially cold nights, he said.
This is Christy, and I'll be reading Odessa American for November 10th, 2023 by staff report. Odessa students watch SpaceX rocket launch their experiment into space. SpaceX's Falcon 9 rocket successfully launched from the Kennedy Space Center Thursday night to deliver supplies to the International Space Station, ISS. Included in its cargo are a science experiment and patch art designed by students from Odessa. UTPB STEM Academy students taking part in the Student Space Flight Experiments Program, SSE, designed a winning experiment that was selected to join the mission. While astronauts conduct the experiment at the ISS, students will perform the experiment on Earth for comparison. The experiment aims to determine if a fungus, Pestalotheopsis microspora, can survive and reproduce in the microgravity environment on ISS. If so, the fungus could be used to decompose plastic waste, which could then become an organic material astronauts could grow plants in for food, according to the Ector County ISD. The STEM Academy team members are Evan Hernandez, Brian Nash, Georgie Shimaroff, Evan Boyer, and Kagan Holder. They are among student participants from all over the U.S., Canada, and Ukraine participating in this mission called SSEP Mission 17. STEM Academy teacher Carrie Grammett-Barr coaches the team, and UTPB students Paula Gutierrez, Joanne Clayton, and Khadijah Evans serve as mentors. Accompanying this mission are two mission patches created by students Edith Martinez and Nayeli Perez. Their artwork was selected from thousands of entries across Ector County ISD. Mission patches are a U.S. spaceflight tradition dating back to the 1960s. Ector County ISD's participation in SSEP was made possible by generous donations from HEB, Chevron, and the Education Foundation. Find this story in audio for blind and low vision adults 2 p.m. daily on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station www.recordinglibrary.org live stream. The Atlantic examines UTPB football coach Chris McCullough's early successes. November 10, 2023 by staff report. The University of Texas Permian Basin's UTPB new head football coach, the nation's youngest coach at 28, is in the national spotlight for leading the Falcons to their best ever season since launching as a program in 2016. Just one day before the Falcons 9-1 are set to face Central Washington for the Lone Star Conference Championship, The Atlantic published a profile of head coach Chris McCullough with the aim of understanding the ingredients to his early successes. The article details examples of his raw talent and dedication to studying game film. It also goes into the reasons McCullough chose to take on the UTPB role 1 year after leading East Central to its best record, 9-3, since becoming an NCAA-level program. The Atlantic cites West Texas's rich pool of football talent and also its resources. McCullough lauded the region's top-notch facilities, its nearby airport, supporting recruiting and financial support from the booming oil and gas industry. It's also what McCullough is doing with local resources that is making the difference, the article indicates. In May, UTPB announced that McCullough found a donor in Cindy and Homer Daniels to help create a nutrition center for UTPB student athletes. He also added player amenities in the locker room like a PlayStation, cornhole boards, and massage chairs, which made the facility feel more like an elite program and encouraged players to stay and bond, according to the report. The culture change clicked in as soon as the season started, notes The Atlantic. For The Atlantic's full report on McCullough, go here. Find this story in audio for blind and low-vision adults 2 p.m. daily on the Recording Library of West Texas radio station www.recordinglibrary.org live stream. UTPB Falcons win first Lone Star Conference championship in program history, November 13, 2023, by staff report. The team that was picked to finish 7th in the Lone Star Conference preseason poll ended up winning the conference title on Saturday. The University of Texas Permian Basin UTPB football team, 10-1, 8-0, continued its historic season at Astound Stadium on Saturday by defeating Central Washington to win the Lone Star Conference championship. The Falcons next advance to face Bemidji State, 8-2, in the first round of the NCAA Division I playoffs, which will be held at Astound Stadium in Midland on Saturday, November 18th, according to UTPB. University officials encourage fans to wear your orange and black and come cheer on the Falcons. The Falcons are ranked number 16 in the D2Football.com Top 25 and number 17 in the AFCA Division II Coaches Poll. Their next opponent, Bemidji State, is ranked number 12 in the latter poll. This has been a season of many firsts for UTPB football, which is having its best year since launching as a program in 2016. Head coach Chris McCullough, the nation's youngest head coach at age 28, helped put his team in the national spotlight by elevating the culture, level of play, and also the facilities for student-athletes at UTPB, according to The Atlantic, which recently detailed some of the reasons for McCullough's early success. More on that story here. New public artwork abounds in Carlsbad, November 13, 2023, by community contributor. This article by Carlsbad Mayor Dale Janway first appeared on the City of Carlsbad's website. You've likely noticed some of the new artwork that has appeared around town. Many members of the community came together to put up several of these beautiful pieces, and the City of Carlsbad was proud to be a part of this effort. The large Zia symbol on the corner of Ray Anaya San Jose Plaza was the creation of Betty Blee, a renowned construction expert who has received awards across the state. Betty also designed the symbol, which was painted by Dale Davis. Several City of Carlsbad teams were part of this project, including the welding shop, our electricians and construction team, and many other public works. Special thanks to Danny Brito, who devoted himself toward getting this done. The Zia serves as a wonderful welcome to one of Carlsbad's most popular parks. There's also a new large metal C facing south on Canal Street now, near the intersection of Plaza Street. Brito played a major role in this project, as well as did City of Carlsbad painter Mark Biscano. Many other City Carlsbad employees in the public works, electrical, and street departments were involved in making sure it was done right. We're glad to add the celebration of our community. We love how much pride all of the City of Carlsbad workers show in projects such as this. The Carlsbad Beach Bandshell has some new decorations as well. Aaron Jones recently completed a vinyl wrap of Carlsbad Caverns inside the bandshell in celebration of the 100th anniversary of Carlsbad Caverns National Park. Another vinyl wrap of the Carlsbad Flume will soon be added to the exterior of the bandshell. This will add historical significance to one of Carlsbad's most popular locations. Anyone driving through town now hopefully has noticed Carlsbad's bat wings along the wall on Canal Street next to Domino's Pizza, a ribbon cutting celebrating the completion of this work of art by artist Kelsey Montague was celebrated on Monday. Carlsbad has already received a great deal of publicity for this creation. Thanks again to Diane Jupe and everyone with the Arts Council for working so hard to add this new feature. Thanks to Beverly Allen and Chevron, Sarah Kidd, Roland Marshall, and everyone who made this possible. There are several more exciting additions to the community on the horizon. We look forward to sharing updates with you as these efforts continue to develop. Find this story and audio for blind and low vision adults 2 p.m. daily on the Recording Library of West Texas Radio Station, www.recordinglibrary.org, live stream.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.